So I'm titling this week's series, the Job, the Problem of Suffering. And let me just give you a wee bit of background about the book of Job. The book of Job is believed to be probably one of the first books that has ever been written. And I mean, not only the first book in the Bible, but the first book in all of the world. It's one of the first books. And so when we're reading the book of Job, we're reading some of the first words that have ever been written down. It is believed that Job lived, what happened here was during the time of the patriarchs. People work that out or surmise that from just the culture and the different things and the fact that there's no reference to the Exodus having taken place, which runs through the whole Old Testament. So it's believed to be around the time of Genesis. Now remember, Genesis wasn't written to several centuries later with Moses, and so it was produced around that time. That's when it's set. It's believed that Job lived probably in Mesopotamia, which is where the Babylonians would come from, where Babel was, where the river Euphrates and the Tigris were. So it's believed to be that area. It's spoken of as being someone who lived the greatest man in the East. This place, Uz, is believed to be in that area. But again, no one can be absolutely certain. Now, let me give you a wee outline of the book of Job, just to make sense of it, because it's quite a big book, 42 chapters, so there's a fair bit to it. Chapters 1 and 2, which we're dealing with this evening, are the prologue, or the introduction, and teaches the story of Job and suffering, and this discussion that takes place between Satan and God. And we'll look at that shortly. So chapters 1 and 2 begins with that, and Job suffering all these different calamities in his life. And then following that, there are three cycles of discussions. Job has three comforters who come to him, and they're called Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. And what happens is Eliphaz speaks, Job responds, and then Bildad speaks, Job responds, Zophar speaks, and Job responds. And that happens three times. So you have the first cycle in chapters 3 to 14, the second cycle in chapters 15 to 21, and then the third cycle in chapters 22 to 31. The one difference in the third cycle is Zophar does not speak for the third time. And after they have finished there at the end of those chapters, a man called Elihu comes on the scene. A fourth person comes onto the scene, and he speaks. And his speech is a wee bit different, and we'll see in due course. And then once he finishes, and he speaks for quite a few chapters, then God speaks. God, who's been silent, now responds in chapters 38 to 41. And after God speaks, we have the conclusion. Job confesses how he was wrong to question God. God rebukes Job's friends, and then Job's fortunes are restored at the end of the book. Now, we might grasp it in our English versions, but the central part of the book of Job, the discussions between Job and his friends, are all done in poetry. And Alfred Lord Tennyson, the famous poet, he said that it's the greatest poetry ever written in ancient or modern times. That was Tennyson's view on it. So it is, I think. Now, it's unlikely that what we have here is that these friends of Job, that they spoke to him in poetry and he responded in poetry. What's probably has happened is that someone afterwards, whoever wrote the book of Job, took what was being said and put it all into this wonderful poetry that is here in this book. Now, what's the theme? Well, the book is about Job's suffering and the reason for it happening. And Job is questioning, and he's someone who sought to be faithful to the Lord. Why is this happening to him? Well, Job's comforters basically believe three things, which comes into their discussion. Number one, God is just. God will do what is right. God rules this world in justice, the second belief. And therefore, thirdly, Job is suffering because he must have sinned. And it's his sin that has brought about this suffering. And Job is arguing his case. And we learn at the very beginning that Job was righteous. Doesn't mean he was sinless, but he was a man in a right relationship with God, and what happened to him was not because of his sinfulness in any way. So Job is right. And in many ways, what we have in these friends who speak to Job is people who have a lot of theology, you'll see, and people who a lot of their theology is right, but their conclusions are wrong. But the bigger issue was the way they deal with Job. They're concerned about winning an argument, and they've no love and no compassion for this man in his suffering. I was saying to Cherif last week when I was going through, I believe ministry students, every ministry student should be forced to do a long study on the book of Job, because I think it teaches us so much about how to deal with people, or maybe more importantly, how not to deal with people who are going through very difficult times. So that's the theme of the book of Job. So let's get into the first two chapters here. Look at this prologue and Job's suffering in chapters 1 and 2. And the first thing we're introduced to is Job's life in verses 1 to 5. And we see there in verse 1 that he was a righteous man. He was blameless, he was upright, he's one who feared God and turned away from evil. And God himself will repeat that later on, that Job was a righteous man. He was someone who was in a right relationship with the Lord, which is through faith and repentance. So he is someone who was right with God. And throughout the book, we need to keep that in mind, that whatever the reason is for Job's suffering, it's not because of his sin. We see in verse 3, Job's possessions. And again, this is the culture of the time. People sort of worked out how rich they were. They didn't have bank accounts, but by the number of animals they had. So he had 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and very many servants. And seen as the greatest of all the people of the East. He was really rich, really wealthy, really prosperous. And then we're introduced to his family. Verse 2, he had 7 sons, 3 daughters, and they would enjoy feasting, we're told in verse 4. And Job was, the character of Job as a father is seen here, in that after they had feasted, he speaks there about consecrating them, committing them to the Lord, and he offers sacrifices in case they have sinned. He's interceding for his family. And that brings a bit of a challenge into it when you think of what's going to happen later and his family are going to be killed. But here was a man who loved his family and interceded so much for them. And you know, we need to ask ourselves, have we those characteristics of Job? Are we righteous? Are we upright? Do we turn from evil? Are we those who really intercede for our families? Are we? It speaks about Job doing this continually. It says at the end of verse 5. He had prolonged intercession for his family. On his knees, he was bringing them before the Lord. Then we move on to Satan and the Lord discuss Job in verses 6 to 12. And we have here a very curious encounter. Strikes me as quite odd, just thinking of Satan and God just talking in a very amicable way, it seems here. There's maybe a bit of poetic license in it, but just some things to learn about Satan, which we need to remember. Satan was traveling to and fro. Satan is not like God. God is omnipresence. Where can we flee from your presence? If we go to the far side of the sea, you're there. The heights, the depths, you're there. We cannot flee from God's presence. He is everywhere. But the devil's not like that. The devil can only be in one place at one time. He is limited. He is finite. Whereas God is unlimited and infinite. And that's important to remember that. Now, Satan, the name Satan here means accuser. That's what that name means. He is the great accuser. Accuser of God and accuser of God's people. Now we see in verse 8 God's testimony about Job. Again, he speaks about how there's none like him on earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil. But then Satan accuses in verses 9 to 10, and he's basically saying, yes, God, Job is upright, Job is righteous, but that's because you protect him. That's because you bless him. You've given him so much. So he's doing it because of what he can get out of you, God. That's why he's doing it. But just notice that. It's something lovely there in verse 10. Have you not put a hedge around him and his house and all that he has on every side? God protects his people. And Satan couldn't lay a finger on Job unless the Lord would allow it. Again, it's not a battle between two equal or nearly equal forces. God is all-powerful, almighty, and Satan can only lay a finger on God's servants when God, in his love and wisdom, determines that it is the right thing to allow. So Satan gives this challenge to God. Stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will curse you to your face. Attack him. Let him face difficult days, and you'll soon see God whether this Job is righteous or not. And in verse 12, God gives permission for Satan to do this. Now, why did suffering happen to Job? Well, in one sense, you can say it happens because of this encounter, because of Satan's challenge to God and God giving Satan permission to do this. And Job never learned that. Job was never told that. But I believe, and I'm certain, there's another reason which we don't know. And I think this is one of the things that God, at the end of the book of Job, he speaks of his wisdom in looking after creation. He speaks of his wisdom in dealing with different creatures and the stars and so forth. God has his reasons. God has his purposes, which are beyond us. Beyond us. And basically what God calls us for and what the book of Job is about is that when we cannot make sense, when we cannot understand what is happening, this God, who is righteous, who is loving, who's wise, we can trust him. He's not going to give us the reasons, and we couldn't probably cope with all the reasons for why things happen. But he is the God who we can trust. So what we move on, we see Satan takes away Job's property and his children there in verses 13 to 22. We have the oxen and the donkeys taken away by the Sabaeans, verses 14 to 15. Verse 16, fire from heaven burns up the sheep. Verse 17, the Chaldeans raid and take away the camels. And then in verses 18 and 19, the sons and daughters are killed by this great wind. Just one catastrophe after another. And of course, the worst was the killing of his children. And Job, look at his response in verse 20. Job rose and tore his robe and shaved his head and fell on the ground and worshipped. And he said, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return. The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. Now, isn't that amazing? You'll recognize those words. Sometimes they're read at funerals. The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. I've got to be honest, I don't read those words at funerals. I don't maybe have the courage to read those at funerals. But what a person is Job. What a man is he. The man who's gone through this. He's lost everything. He's lost his family. And he basically says, the Lord has given and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And here we're beginning to see that why this man was a man without equal. Ezekiel speaks of the three most righteous people in the Old Testament as being Noah, Daniel, and Job. This was a righteous man. This was an amazing man who had an amazing relationship with God, which shone through in this trial. Now, the story goes on, and we see then Satan and the Lord discuss Job again, in chapter 2 and verses 1 to 6. And this time, we have God's testimony of Job again in verse 3, where he says, "Have you considered my servant Job, that he is none like him in the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil?" Exactly what he says before. "He still holds fast his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without reason." And so he's still this righteous man despite all he's gone through. But Satan doesn't give up. He is the great accuser. And verses 4 and 5, he says basically, okay, you've taken away his possessions, you've taken away his family, but you've allowed his health to remain. If you take away his health, if he suffers in his body, then he'll curse God. And so God gives him permission in verse 6 to do this, but he says, spare his life. Do you see what God is doing? He's putting a limit on what the devil can do. Why does God allow evil? The thing we need to remember is that God constantly restrains evil. God does not give evil a free hand. And if evil had a free hand, the world we're in would be a lot more worse than what we see. And so Satan attacks Job's body, we see in chapter 2, verses 7 to 10. We see in verse 7 just the sorry sight. Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with loathsome sores from the sole of his feet to the crown of his head. He took a piece of broken pottery with which to scrape himself while he sat in the ashes. And then we see Job refuses to listen to his wife's advice in verses 9. Look what she says. "Do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die." She's had enough. And she says, "Job, curse God and die. Surely you've had enough." But he said, "You speak as one of the foolish women would speak. Shall we receive good from God, and shall we not receive evil?" And all this, Job did not sin with his lips. Job is still holding on to the truth that God can be trusted, that God loves him, that God cares for him, that God deserves to be worshipped. No matter what happens around him, he still is holding on to that truth. His faith is strong. Now, I can't remember how many times Job speaks in this book. And at different times, Job is in different positions. And sometimes he speaks tremendously with the voice of faith. But other times he speaks with absolute despair. And that's encouraging, because you'll see that in the Christian life, it's ups and downs, ebbs and flows. Our faith at times can be very strong, and at times it can struggle. And going through the book of Job, we'll see that. And it doesn't mean when we're doubting, it doesn't mean that when we're depressed, it doesn't mean when we're low that we're any less Christian or any less valued by God. Job goes through all of that. But at this point, he's remaining strong. Even his wife, who should have been a support to him, even she is sort of turning against him and turning against his God, he remains faithful to the Lord. And then just to finish off, we are introduced to Job's three friends in verses 11 to 13. Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. We see in verse 11, they come to show sympathy and to comfort him. And in many ways, here we have people who have the great wisdom of the world. A great wisdom that indeed people have in regards suffering. And what we will see is they will give the very best of their wisdom. And at the end, God will say to them, "You're wrong." And we see, first of all, they come and they sit for 7 days silently with Job. And unfortunately, they didn't remain silent. It would have been better if they had continued to have been silent, because their wise words were just putting the knife in and twisting the knife and really hurting Job. And you know, there's a great lesson in that. When people are going through really difficult time, so often people do not need theology. People do not need wise words. People do not need answers. Often what people need above everything else is just to know that people care, that people have a love for them, that people are concerned for them. And I think that's where these three men go wrong. Now, they're committed. Can you imagine coming and sitting for 7 days with someone who's suffering? Now, why are they quiet? Why do they not speak? I initially thought that was probably something admirable in that they just want to be there and to be quiet with him. A lot of commentators will just, they take a different slant on it. It's as if they're just so full of themselves and they just are biding their time in which to really put the knife in. Because what we will see as we go on is they have a real chip on their shoulders towards Job. Job is spiritually way above them and beyond them. And Job, they're jealous of him. And sadly, that will come out in what happens. So there we have the introduction to the book of Job. Hopefully that whets your appetite. And so next week we'll continue.